Let me find that. Okay, the next case is a EA-13-139300DA, the U.S. Bank Corp Tower Storefront. It's a design advice request for storefront and entry glazing changes to the U.S. Bank Corp Tower. So,
thank you, and I'm Chris Caruso, BDS staff, and I will try to go quickly. So I'm sure that we are all familiar with this building. It's on a very prominent corner of Southwest Fifth Avenue and Burnside Street. It is an iconic building in the Portland skyline. Just basic zoning information, it's in CXD, Center Commercial, with design overlays, so design review is obviously required. It's in the downtown area. There's a portion of the site that's actually in the Broadway Unique Sign District, and it has a very large available FAR of 15 to 1, plus probably additional bonuses and a 460-foot allowed height. This is just a quick overhead view of the building again. It's basically two buildings connected with a link. There's the tower, which is runs along Burnside, and then there's the shorter building here, and the link is in between the two, and the max line is now running on both sides of the building, and the South Plaza, that is a large open space that's not built on, is down here on the southern portion of the site. So you've seen the drawings in your packet. I'll very briefly go through the information. Basically, there's work proposed for the South Plaza that includes new paving and landscaping, enclosing that breezeway section that is currently now open that people walk through with a new building area, and then adding a new multi-story glass entry structure with some roof decks to that south facade. And there was some conversation among myself and the applicant about possible future signage, and they were asking about if a monument sign would be appropriate in the plaza or not. So I'm just putting that out there as a possibility to discuss today. On the building facades, there is a proposal to replace that sort of rose-colored glass at the link entries. I have some photos of that with a new glass system and mullion pattern, pulling a couple of the main entries closer to the sidewalk and putting new glazing and doors in there. And also, the owner is thinking about a comprehensive sign package, but we have no information about that as yet. But if you have some general comments about that, we'd appreciate it. So existing conditions again, U.S. Bancorp Tower is here, and you can see here that the top of the building, as we know, is this rose-colored glass with this large step pattern that engages both corners. That is also seen in some form in these link structures here that are in between the two buildings, so that's why that this is an element that is proposed to be changed. And then the shorter building here with the breezeway cutout portion that you can walk through here in the South Plaza. So the building has two different qualities at the ground floor, and the tower building has a storefront that's much closer, even though there is some stepping in. The shorter building on the south building has much deeper recessed pattern of ins and outs that happen all around the podium of the building, as well as this very distinctive south facade here. And this is the little walk-through breezeway part that you can cross from the plaza over to Southwest Fifth. And then this is the portion of the building that would have the new squared off rectangular glass enclosed main entries. And then this is a close-up of the link glazing, which is reminiscent, sort of ties into what is happening with the tower, with the stepping and the bi-colored rose-colored glass there. So that would also be changed. This is just some quick rectangles of the areas that we've been talking about. So this all would be affected here and here, as well as the plaza itself where you walk. This is the link, so both ends of the link glazing is proposed to be changed. And then this is an existing entry that's set way far back right now, and they want to pull that forward to align with the other recesses. But you can see how this building goes in and out, in and out, in and out, and then very clearly angles, and it does the same in and out pattern there all the way around. It's less prominent on the tower, but it still does happen. These are images that you already have, so I will not go over all of these. It's just very, very good renderings of how the building would look with the new glazing system at both the link, the pulled forward entry, and the south plaza. So we really like to get your advice and opinions on the proposed changes to this, you know, as I said, very iconic building in the city skyline. I've listed a number of things on the sheets that I've given you a copy of this slide. I think the real fundamental questions are, is it important to retain this angled cell facade as part of the overall building design? You know, does changing this change the cohesion of this building in some way that would possibly not be appropriate, or would the commission not want to approve that? And also, is the building cohesion at the sort of mega scale to the smaller scale negated by adding these new types of entry glazing at key public entries and not retaining sort of the colored glass and the stepping theme that's present on the tower? And that's my presentation.
Any questions? No? Okay. Y'all want to start?
Hi, Richard Dobro with GBD Architects. And
Tim Clemen with Walker Macy, landscape architect.
Better. Can't see what we're seeing. Thank you for staying late and doing this.
Thank you.
And I will try to cut through a lot of this you've already seen. So thanks. Our project, very briefly, is a lot about the inside of the building, and a lot of it's driven by a new large tenant that's going into the building. So the plaza building, which has been typically a single-tenant building, is now becoming a multi-tenant building with someone other than just the U.S. Bank. And so that's driving the need to give the plaza building a little more of its own identity, updating common areas, that kind of thing. So there are the four key areas, the south plaza. This works.
Here's a green one.
Great. There we go. South Plaza, the interior space street called, we call the atrium, the link between the two buildings, the tower lobby. And then labeled here are the multiple entrances to the building that we're going to be, we're looking at, and we may or may not end up doing anything with those. The A and B, the two links between the entrances between the two buildings. At this point, it looks like at most, we would change out the glass and potentially add a canopy and some signage. We were at one time thinking of redoing the glazing system. That's probably not in the budget. This entrance, we are not only moving it forward, the storefront, we're actually closing that off as a building entrance, and that would become more retail space. D is an existing entrance that we would enhance, redo the main entrance part into the atrium building, try to give it a little more of its a sense of entry. E is an existing entrance that comes into a series of escalators that go up to the second floor, and we would also be changing that out, reconfiguring the retail, so that's just a retail entrance. It wouldn't come into the building. The breezeway we touched on, and then the south plaza entrance. And I'm not going to, we can come back to the plans if you have questions. I'm not going to go through those right now. Very quickly, in the atrium space, it's dark, it's heavy, it's kind of dated. It's very monochromatic and pink. And all the interior office space is very closed off from the space. So what we're looking to do is very much lighten it up, introducing these small conference rooms off the space, off the circulation space in a series of glass boxes. And that plays into a little bit on what we're doing at the south entrance and the expression there. The east entrance, again, as you mentioned, we'd be filling this in with, and this is a bad rendering, but essentially the same thing that's right next to it. So we would match as close as we can to what's there. And it would just have a retail entrance at the ground floor.
Does that become a three-story space? Are you filling in?
Fill it in. Above? So, and again, with the tenant, it's a third-floor tenant. They are needing more space. So a lot of the bumps that we're doing on the building are in response to trying to give them some more square footage. And then at the link space, again, we're evaluating what might even be in the budget. But potentially some canopy extension there to give a little better cover, maybe changing out the glass to a more clear, transparent type expression.
And is that all office space behind that or the entry?
Not on that one, no. Above, no. Up once you get up to here it is, okay. Fourth floor and above. The west entrance, same thing. We'd treat it the same. This one would have office space at the third floor and above. And then that plaza entrance, we're looking to potentially introduce a canopy, really play this entrance up a little more than it is right now. Currently, it looks like the entrance to Subway sandwich shop. And so we're really trying to enhance the sense of entrance to the building. Which brings us to the main question of the day, is the South Plaza. It's the epitome of the windswept plazas of the day when they made this in 1972. And the key sort of architectural challenges that we're trying to address are a sense of entrance to the building, a sense of scale, human scale, when you're in that plaza, walking by the space. A sense of identity for the plaza building, for the plaza itself, both with the architecture and with signage, and really trying to create a place. Right now, it's a place to walk through and not a place to stop. And just quickly, current views. As Chris mentioned, the building designed around the Burnside grid, the Old Town grid, and the downtown grid intersections. What we feel, while that created a very strong geometry at the north end of the building, when you get down to the South Plaza, it fails to address the downtown, the street in front of it, with the deep angles, which create I'll call them shadowy pockets. But the entrance is not very clear. The retail and main building spaces are overlapped in a way you're not sure if it's a retail space or a main building space as well. So what we are proposing is to shift the storefronts perpendicular to Oak Street, filling in some of the floor area at the ground floor, and in addition the breezeway, which we feel is more of a wind tunnel than a breezeway. And I think that will help the retail at that ground floor. And then pushing the entrance forward a little bit, and it would result in this something that looks like in this floor plan. And that way, we're starting to create some rooms, some spaces with these edges of the building, and then the planters on the sides. So right now, in this triangular space, it has no edge definition. We're trying to create those edges. And still allow the pedestrian traffic on the street. It has a better definition of the sidewalk. It still has the diagonal paths through the plaza to the building. What do we got here? And then quickly just run through a series of slides, kind of rotating around the plaza, so you can see kind of how that looks. With a series of planters that Tim will talk about up against the granite walls and benches, potentially a monument sign near the entrance, and the infill up to this underside of the fourth floor, the intent is that this is a much lighter, transparent glass element that is a counterpoint to the heavy granite building above. And not unlike the project that we did down in South Waterfront. It's a very glassy entry element. We're looking at four-sided structural glazing, so there's no mullion caps on the outside. It's very clean and slick. And then at nighttime, that becomes a glowing lantern in the plaza and really becomes a key piece of the lighting scheme for the plaza. As well, in this view, you can see some additional signage that we're considering. And I think that's some discussion about placement and types of signs, and also whether this even qualifies with as a freestanding sign if we can do both of them at the same time. Rotating to the west, you have entrance still at the from the west side, but it's a little more clear where the building entrance is and where the retail space is. So it's there's not this acute corner where you're not sure if you're going into a retail space or if you're going into the building. And mention these pieces here. We're looking at lighting schemes and whether we can come up with a custom or a unique lighting fixture that could be an element in that space as well. And then as you come around to the west, you still have that diagonal path through the space, but you can see the building entrance. So it's a more defined space, but it's still permeable. And then from the overview, you get a better sense of those outdoor rooms and what third floor outdoor space for that tenant, and just how we're creating the edges along the sidewalk and still allowing pedestrian traffic through. Tim, you want to take it?
So this is the site plan, and kind of the big idea here is we're taking the interior stonework and we're bringing it back out into the plaza, repurposing for the planter walls. The other thing in this project is basically a repaving project. So we're looking at some different ideas to bring a new type of a paver out here. Right now it's an isosceles triangle. We're looking at maybe a smaller scale brick paver that's similar to the pavers on 5th and 6th, but still have a directionality to it and bring down the scale of the space and still have an energy.
What's on 5th and 6th now?
It's a 4x8.
It's brick.
Right? It's a brick. It's a clay paver, mortar set clay paver.
So you're proposing a rectangular paver?
Yeah, a 4x8, and then introducing a, next slide. So you can see we're looking at the inspiration of the panels here. In terms of a paver module, you could see it down here. So the small paver is a 4x8 and a 6x12. So there's a directionality that happens in a change in pattern. The other thing is looking at using, this is from the memorial in New York City to 9/11. They're using the same color paver, but just a different module. And we're looking at that, too, in terms of striping to bring down the scale. And then as Richard had talked about, the kind of the angles that are so important to the original development, looking at bringing some of those angles through the plaza in a stainless steel band that provides another geometry, another overlay, another just a richness to that plaza.
Can we go back two slides? So what we're seeing is brick pavers.
We're just seeing
diagonal stainless steel.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And they're actually a concrete paver.
Concrete.
Okay. But we have some samples.
Stainless is a
3/16 inch piece of stainless.
So it's not to scale.
No, it isn't. Right. It's funny working at 30 scale and trying to represent a 3/16 inch.
So those are concrete pavers, exactly. Or those brick pavers?
They're concrete.
Exactly. So where are you using a brick? Or
the mall has brick.
So it's a scale. So we looked at a lot of different paving modules, and a lot of the trend these days are using long linear pavers, but that really wasn't of the context of the place. And we didn't feel like bringing those clay pavers into this plaza was the right response, because we are trying to create a new identity but still have that contextual relationship. So
are they mortar set?
They would be mortar set. That's the other thing that's important to know. This is all in structure. So there's a 4-inch profile that we're working here, so there's not a lot of room in that. and mortar set is just, it's works really well for pressure washing and the durability.
Planters on this one? Or go
to, the next one. So the planters, big pink, is it's interesting. We're thinking on those interiors that Richard has talked about, lighting it up, taking those granite panels off, and then repurposing them, having them guillotine split. The outside edge of the planters would be stacked, similar to this project down at UC Davis, where they stack the granite pieces to form the planter wall. And then incorporating into that granite wood benches with backs, maybe some without backs. And then in terms of the planting, it's such a monumental space, and trying to use an Italian cypress or maybe a green screen or something on that angular wall, and to bring that green down into the plaza, so much more of a mass planting on those two faces. But then when you get into the plaza area, doing something more garden and something that's, you know, similar to a collection, a lot of colors and textures that pull people out into those areas instead of the mass planting. So using two different planting techniques, one to bring the scale down, and then one to really kind of focus you in, and maybe you see a honeybee or something in there. So this is the similar view. So these are more of the mass plantings, large scale Italian cypress that may really thrive against that hot south wall, transitioning to a creeping rosemary or something of more of a monoculture. But then you get into these pots here, planters, and they'd have more texture and color and seasonal change.
So those planters would have the stacked granite?
Stacked granite, yeah. So it has that kind of that filigree there. The other thing we're showing here is a paving pattern that is striped with kind of a carpet or a walk-off, large walk-off mat. We're looking for suggestions on that approach as opposed to just a large field where we're using the smaller module pavers.
And you've also got some other stripes going across?
These are the angles, yeah. So there's
then there's also these stripes.
Yeah, so these are the stripes. Yep, and then here is the walk-off kind of mat there. The other thing we're thinking about is that we can't exceed a certain depth of soil on the plaza because of the structural capacity of the existing slab, and there's budget constraints. And so what we're trying to do is pick our worst-case scenario for height, and that's this corner here. What we like to do is set a datum for all the planters to be at one height. So there's not this kind of up and down happening. There's the plaza slopes down, but the planters have a datum across the site. And here's just looking at, you know, the options. Sorry, this is kind of vertigo here to split it like this. But here's the Italian cypress. Then we're looking at something maybe a little bit more graphic of a green screen on the wall, just to, again, to work in that peripheral vision of 30 feet tall and just soften that blank wall, bring the scale back down to the plaza so you can enjoy some seating opportunities when the weather's good.
Is that it?
Yep.
Okay.
Can
questions? Do you have any comments?
Can I add one comment?
Sure.
We didn't get any information from PBOT because this was, we didn't have a lot of drawings, but anything that is being shown that is off the property that's in the right-of-way, like the pavers and things like that and sidewalk, would all be non-standard improvements in the right-of-way, and if PBOT even approved it, it would definitely have to be part of design review, but sure. we'll have to get with PBOT and figure out if that would even be allowed.
So
right.
You don't have any BES stormwater requirements because you're on structure?
Yeah, and it is just a maintenance system project. There's really no way to infiltrate or do flow through planters here. I should point out the structure goes out to this curb line here. And this is the property line. And currently the pavers, the isosceles pavers, follow that same curb line. So we're keeping the curb in place, and we're not disturbing the earth, if you will. And that's what BES is concerned about.
And so what's happening to the existing pavers, the isosceles pavers? Are they?
They would be removed. They're failing, and the membrane is leaking, and so... They replaced all of them around.
The pavers are failing?
No, the pavers aren't failing. It's just the membrane is failing, right?
And the pavers have cracked, and they can't get them replaced.
How old are they? They're
40 years.
They're original. And what's interesting has happened to this project is that, I don't know if you recall, the mall used to have the pavers all the way out to the curb, and slowly those pavers are disappearing. So if this project goes in as conceived, the only pavers that will be left of that triangle will be along Burnside in those little pockets. So.
I love those pavers.
Yeah, and to have them tied, they're tied into the tree grates. The tree gates were that same six-sided. So that's where they could go.
Yeah. So is there a reason why you're not going back with similar pavers?
They're not they're a custom paver. Sure. And so the owner really, when they do have a crack paver, it's a custom run, and they want to get away from that. So there's not that mold isn't available.
I guess that's the one downside about mortared concrete pavers is now they all have such a big bevel on, and then by the time you do that mortar joint, it ends up looking like an inch joint, so you have to like pack them really tight together.
Hanover actually makes, and I call these brick, they make a brick-pressed paver, and they actually have a smooth edge, so it completely avoids that problem you're talking about. Yeah, because you could lose a small child in that.
And so there's an attitude in the original design about how glass meets a column everywhere in the building. And so I'm just curious about the bay you've got. Seems to wrap around columns. And also, the parallelogram of the tower starts the design. And then half the parallelogram is the triangle. And so what is it about the design that's critical that this element has to come out and be orthogonal to the city grid versus to the original intent of the building? So we've got several questions in there.
And hopefully it's an easy answer, but there are, that angle is pervasive through the building, mm-hmm. and it, frankly, from the owner's standpoint, it's created more problems than opportunities in how they do their leasing and tenant build-out. If you see the image of what we're looking at doing in the atrium space is where we are going away from that angle out. Yes, yeah. We're going away from that angle. The shift in the grid is still there. The columns from one side to the other are offset, and we're treating the two sides differently. But I think coming back to the original. I think this shows it fairly well, is that it doesn't create great spaces here in this corner, and it made sense on Burnside, and when you get 500 feet away, it's not making as much sense.
I'm not asking so much about the infill as much as the, for instance, like the breezeway, sort of makes sense. I'm talking about really the piece that you're bringing out mm-hmm. in front of the building. Mm-hmm. Why is it so important to address Oak Street when people are coming from the corners? And so I'm just kind of curious about that dynamic of having it be parallel and perpendicular to the street grid versus right. the corners and the building itself.
Well, I think one of the opportunities that it's doing is that it's creating that edge for the two sides for these outdoor rooms. It's by coming out at a slight angle when you come around the corner, you can actually see the entrance. It's not extending that far at the narrow end. It's only about 5 feet out at the narrow end. But because of the angle, as you come around the site, on that side of the building, it looks much, much more pronounced.
Yeah, I guess my question is, I mean, are people that kind of befuddled that they don't know where an entrance is? I mean, if it's orthogonal or not? I mean, I'm just kind of, there's a big plaza, and people find the entrance now, right? And so there's a clarity you're looking for, but...
Right.
I mean, are people like, just not very bright, and they can't find something unless it's on a particular angle, or?
I think it has a lot to do with also just creating an identity for this end of the building. The plaza, again, it's kind of the stepchild to the tower, and it actually is a building in its own, and it's a very large building, but it doesn't have a good sense of where is the entrance. I mean, you know there's got to be an entrance there because it's cut out, but it doesn't really have anything that you remember as oh, that's the front door of the building.
So do you think you're able to create an entry with identity that is more sympathetic to the angle at some point, that it references the building that it's a part of?
We've gone through many options. I think we've come to this point, and I think we feel like that's the best solution.
It's interesting because it's an odd. I worked on this for 2 years, exactly the project you're doing, so I know it's hard. There's that double set of doors. It's more confusing on the inside, I think, than it is on the outside.
In the vestibule?
Pardon?
In the vestibule?
Yeah. And so what I'm questioning is whether adding a transparent cubicle to the front of that makes it more clear or actually makes it less clear, less obvious to enter.
Yeah,
that's an interesting point. Because there's no definition. I could see it if the entry portion took the plane of the building rather than extending out, and that there was an awning that extended out over the entry, you would read it without putting this box on the front of the building. Mm-hmm. Is the box doing anything? Is the new entry vestibule doing anything more than announcing itself? Is there an interior circulation use or reason for it?
It primarily is an entrance vestibule.
Okay.
I think, as I mentioned, I think it's helping create those outdoor rooms, because right now, with essentially 100-foot facade going straight up, and there's no definition to any space there, and so I think that's an added benefit of it pushing out a little bit.
And you have a terrace space on top of it?
Yeah, the third floor would have a small outdoor terrace.
Is it safe to say your client's asking you to depart from the current angulation and grid that's going on in the building to create more usable, leaser-friendly space?
Yes. So, that's part of it.
I mean, for me, I feel like the elephant in the room here is we're trying to abandon this building architecture because it doesn't work for our tenant from a leasable space, so we're trying to square everything up, justify why we're squaring it up to the street, and satisfy our client who's put us in a budget handcuff to do anything super creative. And I'm very familiar with this space. I worked on site master plan studies for this whole block 20 years ago at Mitchell Nelson Group. And my office was a block away from here for about 8 years. So I've been in this space quite a lot.
Well, I think
it is confusing. I agree that the tunnels, it's a wind tunnel now, but I've always looked at
really
that space with so much hope and so much ambition that it could really be something cool and special. And I see this and I go, wow, you really got the budget handcuffs on, because this is it's straightforward, that's for sure. It's just I guess programmatically your charge is let's create space that's more leasable, lease friendly.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that the
come
tenant
up with a way to cross it into this building architecture that will pass muster with design review. That's a really difficult, really difficult task.
I wouldn't say that the tenant needs are driving necessarily what we're doing on the entry. Obviously, some of the infill has relates to that. I think it serves the retail on the ground floor better in this instance.
So what is the attitude towards, I mean, not only is the vestibule orthogonal now to the city grid, but the landscaping is too. It's like you've abandoned this diagonal space.
Energy.
And you're basically whipping the angularity out of the building when it's in front of you and it's there, and it's, I mean, it seems like you're really fighting against something that is just so inherent.
And it's not, what, 98.7% leased?
Not at the moment, or won't be.
I mean, that's changed, but it used to be, up until about a year ago.
Yeah, that's the whole problem, is what you have is U.S. Bank is downsizing.
Right.
And the building ownership is trying to activate that second, third, and the retail floor.
So we need, can you come up and just introduce yourself?
My name is Kent Potterbaum with GBD.
Okay.
I think what Richard tried to say is we've got a new problem with the building and the fact that it's multi-tenanted. And if you go back to the image, or you have those images of the interior, U.S. Bank has really turned their back on the atrium space and everything. It was a functional building for them. They used it. Our charge has been to activate that first, second, and third floor and make it more interesting for tenants to use. I don't know if you realize it, but that plaza is, you could take the tower and stick it into the west side. It fits in there. It's a deep, deep mm-hmm. bay. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to activate that. And part of that is this plaza, which we've worked on it now, I think, for doing schemes on it for 5 to 7 years. I think this is a simple and very interesting way to deal with the plaza. I don't think that we've necessarily been handcuffed on the design of that entry space. We think that's been a simple solution to the building without taking over the building too much. We actually had a scheme where we looked at replacing that whole centerpiece between the two monolithic planes there, and we've toned that down quite a bit since then. The breezeway is very problematic for the building for several reasons. It's a wind tunnel for one, but it's a hangout for mm-hmm. transients. They've had several problems, anywhere from people sleeping in there to doing all sorts of things in there, and they want to get rid of that. It's just very problematic for them. Mm-hmm. Part of the way they're paying for the improvements, of course, is getting more lease space. So this breezeway and the entrance that they're taking out affords more leasable space that they can get rent off of.
So I guess I look at this, and it's the angles are what define the building, and define the site. And it's taken down to the details and the ceiling of the existing, what are you calling that?
Atrium.
Okay. And then the paving.
So and everything.
So I guess I wonder about the fighting it versus embracing it, and what that would bring. And I don't know what everyone else.
No, I feel like
no. That's where I am too.
It's just funny because the last couple of projects we've had have had like angles against the diagonal buildings.
And if any project,
we've been sitting here for we've been sitting here for 6 hours hearing you guys fight the angles. Now this is interesting.
I know.
No. I wouldn't fight the angles. I mean, the way it was explained before is fine, but this one is about angles, and so it is kind of funny at that point.
Well, you've got the interior space that is perpendicular to Oak Street and very dominant.
Sure.
So we're kind of bringing that out and trying to join them without, just blasting away the angle. But yeah, there's probably, in our opinion, an overkill of that geometry, and we have simplified it.
I mean, I think what you've done with the paving and the banding and then the stainless steel bands that go through it, it's very fine-grained, and it could be very beautiful. I think that, it's such a very restrained design. And, if you're doing something like that, just all the details and the materials have to be of superior quality.
Well, and where you know, when you cut it along that stainless steel diagonal, what's your smallest brick cut then, and what does that do? And I mean, it's,
that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you don't know how many cuts that's going to be.
But there's lots of examples where landscape architects have done that, and they've embedded stainless steel patterning within mortared, you know, like concentric circles. There's that Peter Walker one in Costa Mesa. Uh-huh. It can be done, and I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're going to end up with some slivers in places, no matter what. But to me, it's like the building's all about the granite. And so I was happy to hear that you're using granite in the planters and that you're bringing that granite down to the ground plane, and that's something that it doesn't have right now. But it's just all these forms are just very sort of traditional forms. And I agree with what David Mark is saying about this building being all about the angles. And even if the ground plane is, I don't know, it just seems like it could be enlivened in some way as well. I mean, it's very restrained, but it seems like there could be more going on there too.
Well, I wonder if the vestibule, maybe we just discuss a little bit here too. I don't have any problem with filling the breezeway. I think that's just smart at this point. It just makes sense.
Yeah,
it's always been kind of.
I used to feel that way, but when I was working on that, I realized the whole building comes down to this triangle, and that is a triangle.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, that is the. In some ways, that awkwardness created is part. But yeah.
But if
I understand
if you can,
what a problem
if it's transparent.
Is.
Well, yeah, if there's a way to enclose it and still celebrate the shape.
Yeah. Right, right. So you don't make it solid from that triangular corner. You know, it's all glass, and that's what they've got proposed as the glass. But I was wondering if, this vestibule can actually be a mediator between the kind of orthogonal new atrium that you've got and then the triangular piece outside, if it could have two faces, so to speak, you know, and be orthogonal inside and then be more more like a parallelogram or something on the outside, you know, where it basically angles with the building. And I just wonder also about the deck up top. It just seems so awkward versus the continuation of more lease space instead of having the deck up there and lowering that thing to where it's below, so that you've got in and out at the same datum line, you know? And then it seems like, at that point, then does the landscape start to follow that that mediation of the vestibule and stop being so, I mean, kind of boring, really. I mean, it just,
static.
The dynamic nature of this triangular site is something that I just think should be enhanced and celebrated.
I agree.
Could this be, I don't know if I'm not tall enough. Could you take the glazing straight across?
Right, that's what.
Keep the original doors. This becomes an awning. Mm-hmm. So you have a triangular awning that marks the entry. You don't need the room below it. You've already got the room inside.
Mm-hmm. We've looked at an option like that.
Okay. And you rejected it because?
The consensus was the canopy felt like a more traditional response that didn't really fit the building.
I think if you could come out. Yeah. Well, or if you did.
It's the same geometry as this.
What is?
This. It's a triangle. It's the same thing. Okay.
Yes, you end up with a lot of triangles, that's for sure.
It's, right.
I have to say, I really do like what you're doing with the interior, though. I mean, you really needed something to happen there. It's just so much of the building on the ground plane doesn't work. I mean, it's really glad that you're doing something with it.
But I thought the Gensler redo helped it along quite a bit on the atrium. It was so much better than it was before, which was purple and red brick triangular all the way on the inside.
Streetscape. old streetscape.
Yeah.
It's just so slippery in there.
Yeah.
You know, Tad, one of the issues we had with the canopy when we were looking at it is it just looked completely out of place, out of scale when you put it on there. And that's one of the struggles we had. We even looked at raising it up to, you know, another story, and then it looked really funny. Mm-hmm. And that's why we kind of pushed away and came up with this little cube addition and pushed it out.
Yeah.
So we have, matter of fact, we've looked at a canopy that went all the way across the glass.
The eyebrow, yeah.
And it always came back, you know, that's it's only seven stories, but it just looked really wimpy down there.
Sure. Yeah, I just wonder about the datum line of the upper glass just continuing past whatever is below it and maybe just forgetting the balcony as a recess. If there's something built that's out from that, maybe there's you can access it. But it's just at this point, the scale of that thing just seems to want to be tied in with the bottom of where the recesses go in. So there's this play of inside going inside the tall elevation, going inside and then coming outside, not overlapping.
There's no invitation to, there's no gesture extending to you to invite you in. You're walking through a box the way it is now. So an awning is a gestural invitation to enter in a traditional form, but you don't have that. So you're just asking somebody to walk in a glass box, which is different than entering a building.
We're going to make it really shiny, though.
Shiny box,
ooh, I know.
Or shiny penny. The other thing is the attitude and the details throughout the building of how the glass hits those columns. And the glass now is kind of wrapping around the columns and encompassing it. I would kind of look around the building and you know, all those columns come down to the ground is maybe setting in from that and respecting that kind of expression of the columns all the way to the ground.
We were actually looking at taking the cladding, the granite cladding off of these so that this becomes a continuous reed of infill and then clad the columns differently. So otherwise the box was getting interrupted at this point and it started to look like an add-on.
The box doesn't want to be there.
Well, I guess that then it's like, okay, now you've taken the meat off the bones in a way. I just don't understand why that's necessary. I think it's all infill, you know, right? So, I mean, it's not all infill. So those columns coming down are pretty strong. Mm-hmm. If you've got the glass above it in one plane, and then you're still going in and out below it. But those columns are still expressed. It's still, I mean, so, and probably maybe even helps because now you've got a frame for your vestibule, right?
I think what we found is that it made the box seem like half a box that was tacked on. And so when we overlap the columns, it becomes almost a complete expression of the box. I understand the comment about the overlap wanting to slide under. I completely agree with that.
Well, I think it's similar. Well, I'll just go into this little rant, not a rant, but maybe just insights relative to what I talked about on the 700 MoMA building, that if this were, and it is, it's an iconic building. It's not on the National Register of Historic Places. It could be probably in another 10 years. But if you're treating this as a culturally significant building, there's an attitude towards it. And the attitude is, what are those historic character-defining features, or the character-defining features in this case, and how are they treated? And there's a hierarchy to those. There's the mass all the way down to the details of how glass goes to corners and how it goes to columns. So any addition, any intervention should take that into account and be respectful of that, reinterpret it, but at the same time be complementary to it. And it's an extremely hard balancing act. To me, this goes towards the side of not respecting the character-defining features. So working within that framework would be something that I would be looking for, of what are the character-defining features, how are you interpreting those, and then how are you reinterpreting those in the new expression?
And my thinking would be exactly what I said on the 700. Maybe you create the awning that is not connected to the building. Maybe there's an entry here that could be of a canopy type that clearly marks the entry. It's a procession. You get out of your car or whatever, you walk along the sidewalk, you decide to go into this building, you're shielded from the elements up to the building, and then you enter the building.
And I guess I feel like part of the fun about this plaza space now, even though it's just a big blank, is that you're entering this diagonal building on a diagonal. I just think it'd be really nice to kind of keep that approach, you know, in some way that your entry is kind of acknowledging that people are coming in from the corners, on this particular side anyway.
The angle is challenging.
Yep.
I think it sounds like everybody's looked at this building before. So.
I haven't, other than admiring it.
I don't know if that's fortunate or unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So any?
The interior looks awesome.
Yeah, the interior looks great.
No, we don't have, I mean, we're not, that was just courtesy to show us what's going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, the glass boxes on the side of the conference rooms has some relation to the outside, right. But
yes.
it's not sure. The overriding.
Sure.
Well, I think one of the reasons why we wanted to show it also is that is such a powerful element, that atrium going
yes.
straight through it.
Right, right.
And we're having to come out, mm-hmm. so respecting the inside as well as trying
right.
to respect the outside,
right.
it's balancing that.
Yeah, and so it all focuses on how that vestibule transitions between the two. That's the key.
So is the wood on the benches, like managing the wood on the interior in terms of what it looks like?
The new wood, yes. Well, we'd see it. we're getting there.
Tim, did you look at diagonal planters?
Yeah, and the there's an efficiency factor with the triangle. What do you do in that little point?
Yeah.
And if there's nothing really happens there, so you're left with probably a 2-foot mulch zone in terms of the planters. And then I guess I would ask the question of you guys, when you go, it's a big plaza.
It's the second largest open space in downtown.
Yeah, it's a clearing in the infrastructure, the architecture, and the introduction of the planters is one is creating a smaller nesting space,
mm-hmm.
and the introduction of more energy, more angular planters kind of takes that nesting space away, and it becomes more about circulation.
Pass through. Yeah.
And so if it's important to create that other outdoor space, then I think the diagram we have is really strong and clear. Mm. If we want to add more energy to those paving and planter interactions in those faces, then you start to nibble into that kind of clarity of that public open space while still providing a clear edge between that space and the street. So,
I think it'd be worth looking at, though, because I don't think that everything has to be on an angle. You know, you can throw one angle in just so that it's not a 90-degree space on the inside.
Even.
And the other thing is, I actually did those planters
did
that you showed at UC Davis. If you could take that same method of construction and angle it, not to a point, but to something that is, kind of chopped off before the point, and the end of the planter becomes a seating plinth, like the whole... You know, the planter could be 2/3 of the stone, whatever it is.
Right.
And there could be this place at the end that you sit on. I just think there could be a little bit more kind of creativity applied to the shape of the planters and the thickness of the walls. They don't all need to be the same thickness.
Right, as in the Davis example. Yeah.
Have you looked at a scheme on the plaza that would basically abandon linear... rectilinear or even triangular shapes and go with more organic
circles?
We did, and it was the pod scheme, and it was very much islands in the field of pavers. And I kind of liked it, and it had kind of a dynamic of more of a natural form because there are no really right angles in nature. And it had a nice dynamic, but it didn't create a space at all. It was more of circulation with little eddies off those circulation patterns.
That's what that space wants, is tiny little pockets for seating, but it is a movement through space. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's important.
What we're trying to change.
Yeah.
You may come back to an orthogonal form, but I just think maybe that you just had a really early stage, but the kind of configuration of the planters that you've shown here, it just seems like it needs something more. At least that's the way I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the Italian cypresses, they seem really dwarfed by the size of the building. And I wouldn't say green screens. I think green screens wouldn't look good here at all. But and Italian cypresses, they're so kind of touchy in our climate that, you know, if you had like one or two die in that row, it's just like they're not really reliable trees in our climate.
And what's there now? It's just paving next to the building, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What about putting the sign up above those where those cypress are instead of on the planters?
Yeah.
Name the building, not the planter.
Yeah, yeah. I would be in favor of that.
we've talked about doing large banners that could be addressing city function, you know, civic functions, but the sign code, as far as I know, won't allow anything
big enough. I worked for a long time to get a Times Square video, you know, 50-foot screen there, and
yeah, didn't. Yeah, it's, you know, it'd be great to have a, you know, a banner that's 75 feet high. And,
yeah.
But
temporary.
Temporary.
Well, even in temporary, it just won't comply.
Change it out.
Yeah, it can still only be 100 square feet.
Oh, two.
I thought it was 200.
Well, talk to the timbers. Right?
How do they just do it? I don't think they ask.
Yeah. Yeah. I just wonder about planting against the building. It just it's so awkward in a way. I know what you're trying to do, but
I'd prefer not to see planting against the building, because anything you do is going to be dwarfed by the size of the building.
Yeah, it just seems. I know. Yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, you don't want to have a long pass through there. That gets to be a very awkward space. But maybe it's just part of the space instead of.
Maybe the other planters become a little bit bigger, so there are more objects in space, right. And then that's just a clear,
that's just another,
You know, what's interesting is you guys are kind of hashing through the same things that we've already hashed.
Oh, there's absolutely. Only so many.
We've looked at it without the trees and kind of came back. It looks a little wimpy there, you know, and you put a planter up against there or close to it, and it just gets kind of mashed. So having that element go a little vertical, you know, really kind of help that scale of the place a little bit more.
It'd be one thing if you could plant red cedars or something like that, get really big, because
So have you thought, I mean, what about, like, freestanding pieces of art and things that have that as their background? And so that
giant bronze thing on the wall.
So then, either on the wall or right, you know, something of a scale that, starts to define that, and it creates a moment.
Creates an identity,
right.
That the architecture becomes the backdrop, but the art actually becomes the thing that everybody, it's the picture that everybody takes.
Right.
And then it becomes a destination and a place, and people want to be in the building.
And one might be on the wall up there because you don't have much sight, and this one might be on the site, or they're both on the wall or whatever. But a scale that really starts to mark that moment could really...
Be outstanding.
Yeah. I think that could be...
The idea has come up, and I just don't know that we've been able to pursue that very far at this point.
Any other comments?
I have one follow-up. We haven't talked about the link glazing, that rose-colored stepped glazing. Are we in love with that?
I could probably help with that. By the time we're all said and done, I don't think we're going to be able to afford to do much with it. I think that's number 10 on a list of 10.
Yeah, sure.
And I think one of the things that we would like to do is get a canopy over there with some signage, and we haven't had enough time to develop that. It's, if you walk up to that building, there's not much coverage right there on those two sides. So trying to get something that blends with the building is probably more what we're looking at versus changing out the glass.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you did some of these things, you might actually have a less expensive proposition over here. If you just filled in the glass and lowered the lobby vestibule and apply that to some of the other bigger moments like art and whatnot, and not the big planters, and dispersing those across the western part of the site, maybe. That might be, just move that money around, like we always do.
But is it at the sacrifice of that open space there? If we were to consolidate the planters, let's just broad terms, remove the planters at the wall, put something on the wall, consolidate the planters so that southwest corner becomes a large planter that you could sit around it.
They could be two longer planters. I mean, I think the shape of them, whatever kind of form they take, I think having, three or four of them, it's nice. I wouldn't consolidate them into, two long planters. Mm-hmm. That cuts off the circulation flow too much.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than diagonal or square, I mean, you could do a series of planters circular in an arc, which kind of helps to define the space, but it's not a slave to the diagonal.
But they will be objects in space, so I think just the composition of them on that ground plane, I mean, it could be an interesting composition in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And still create that room that you want.
What do you guys feel about the pavers?
I think it'd be impossible to get somebody to custom make those triangular concrete unit pavers in this day and age. I mean, I think actually we tried to use similar triangular pavers and have somebody do it, and it was just like, forget it. So I think that they probably are at the end of their lifespan, and I could see going. I mean, Hanover is really the top of the line for, especially the ones that you're picking without the bevel. I'm sure those are a lot more expensive than the beveled ones. So I'm fine with the pavers that you're.
And you're okay with
the
color?
The pattern.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So is it a field or broad bands of, you know, accents? Is it more of?
Well, you're doing the kind of banding all along the inner area, so it kind of makes sense that, you know, you're kind of doing banding up here as well, because you're kind of doing that all in the interior.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of brings the two together. I mean, I when I saw it, I liked it. I liked what you were doing.
Well, I like that it connects to, at least you connect it back to a pattern on the building, which kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was, and that's what I'm talking about, but the attitude towards the building, looking at how things are already there as points of departure for design.
Inspiration.
Right, right. And so, but I just wonder about the diagonal.
The diagonal sense.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder just about that. I wonder if maybe the planters are the diagonal,
yeah,
or something, and instead of having all those cuts and the little pieces,
yeah,
and
mm-hmm,
it just gets kind of funky and messy and difficult and more expensive, and
that probably falls in
harder to maintain. And
yeah.
What?
Yeah, I mean, if it pays for something else,
yeah,
value,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, I'd go for that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it should have some relationship to the interior floor,
and that's the intent. We're looking at patterns that mimic that same thing all the way through the age.
Because that is the idea, is that, you know, when it was originally designed, you just,
yeah,
uh-huh,
right,
it was,
right,
a carpet that went from curb to the other curb.
Right.
Right.
And you walked through a building and you felt, mm-hmm, or the, mm-hmm, intent was that you were,
yeah,
in a, you know, little city.
Yeah, it's such a strong design, and whether, I mean, it's got
like
people
it
that
not
admire it and people that despise it, but it is what it is, and working on something in a way that enhances it and maybe leverages the good parts, you know, and reinterprets them in a way that people look at it a little in a more favorable light. You know, mm-hmm, you're basically trying to make it a more friendly kind of proposition, and that's not easy. Mm-hmm. I can understand that, but I think not wringing out every kind of eccentric aspect of it would be something I would like to, mm-hmm, see brought back in, so that some of the angularity and the those pieces that define it aren't all gone, you know. So. That it? Yay! Any questions?
9 o'clock.
We can probably follow.
Sorry.
Time's up. The minor one on the signage, we can follow up with Chris on monument signs. That's more of a code technicality than anything else. But I don't know if you have any comments on the freestanding letter signs. And
Are there two signs in there? There's like the one in the, it seems very awkward.
The little low one.
That seems extremely awkward.
Yeah.
It seems
like
why do you need it? You've got your vestibule. Right.
Well, what's interesting about that is the owner just loves that.
Which one?
The U.S. Bank Corps right there.
That right there?
On the planter?
Yeah.
Do they want to? So I mean, it's going to be like, you
know.
Yeah.
Right away.
I'm not a fan.
I mean,
you what?
I kind
of
like it.
You like it?
Put it on the building. It's,
yeah,
not the planter. It's the building.
Yeah. Say maybe up top or something,
yeah,
on the above the vestibule,
yeah,
or something that, mm-hmm, it's so in your face as a pedestrian. It's like,
yeah,
I'm not sure. If that were a piece of art, I'd love it. But then that's kind of what we're talking about, I think, is, you know, the commercial aspects of it are overbearing to me at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Particularly when they're, you know, you're walking right by it. It's
yeah.
Like,
yeah. So
integrating it into that ledge stone patterning that you were talking about.
Yeah, that'd be difficult too.
Yeah, there would be some nice cuts there.
Yeah, doing the U would be fun.
But I could see all the people putting cups and trinkets on the letters and kind of stacking books or whatever in there, and newspapers. Could get animated pretty.
That's the daytime crowd.
Yeah.
You've got the nighttime crowd.
Yeah, I don't want to know what the nighttime crowd is.
Yeah, right, right.
Great.
Thank you.